Welcome to session 3 of Turning Your Talent into Income. In this session, we're going to learn about the gift of personality type. The gift of personality type. So over the last, 15 years or so, I've been studying many different personality type systems, or what are called typologies. And there are as many different personality type systems out there as, you know, kind of there are styles of clothing. There are a lot of them. But it turns out that these are very valuable. And some of the systems that I've studied are particularly valuable. And some that I've even kind of created myself have been very valuable to me. Now, when people hear personality type, sometimes they think, oh, you're trying to pigeonhole me or put me in a box. And I like the way in the Myers-Briggs system, they refer to type as preferences. It's your preferred way of interacting in the world, your preferred way of taking in and processing information, your preferred way of doing things. It's not destiny. Now, I tend to think that we come wired with certain very strong preferences. Okay, it's kind of like we're hardwired. If you really, really work hard, you can develop others, but it seems like it's usually a very strong preference. But preference puts it in a framework that allows you to realize that these things can grow, they can change, they're flexible over time. Now, when you think of type as, you know, being hard and fast and solid, this can be a trap. So we're going to use personality types as kind of shortcuts or rules of thumb. And the real approach here is to look for patterns in your personality and then experiment to see if what you learned about that pattern is valuable. What you don't want to do is pigeonhole yourself and say, this is the way I am, and this is the way I am forever. Okay, so for example, one of the personality type systems that we're not going to be using here, but that I've heard many times in my life is, I'm an Italian, and we Italians express our feelings. And so I like to yell and scream and throw things. Okay? You might have some Italian in your family. That kind of rationale, I am this way, and that's why I do these things, and just get over it, that's not what we want to do with personality type here. We do not want to judge ourselves and use them forever. On the other hand, by looking for these patterns and looking for them particularly in ourselves and in others, we can get great insight into where our natural talents might be and where we could start developing and how we could connect that to some of the big opportunities in the world. So right now, we're going to learn about two different personality systems. One is the three brain system, and one is Carl Jung's model that has been turned into a personality type system called the Myers-Briggs system, which you've probably heard of. It's probably the most popular one. So first, we're going to talk about the three brains. I've found this to be one of the most valuable and kind of simple models for understanding myself and others and my relationship with myself and others, how people relate to each other. And it goes like this. Dr. Paul McLean, after doing a lot of research, he put together a model called the triune brain theory. And his theory is that we have three brains in one. That at the top of our spinal cord, kind of at the base of our skull, we've got this ancient part of our brain that's just like the brain that reptiles have. And we can actually call this the reptile brain or the lizard brain. It's the reptilian system. And this system developed first, and it developed to interact with the physical world. Okay, this is the system that developed to protect us, to get us to fight when there was an enemy, or to run if there was a predator, and to reproduce. Okay, so this is the fight or flight, sex, power, kind of physical interaction with the world brain. It's the survival brain. On top of the lizard brain, or kind of around it and including it, grew a new brain as we started to give birth to live young and to hang out in groups and herds. And this is the mammalian brain. This is the emotional brain. And emotions, in a way, they kind of are abstracted or metaphorical physical things. So we can actually feel emotions almost like physical things happening to us. If we feel emotional pain, it triggers areas in the brain that are like the physical pain areas. Or if we feel emotional pleasure, it's like feeling physical pleasure. Many of us, in fact, confuse the two. We confuse physical and emotional because we haven't learned the distinction. In any event, the emotional brain, okay, this thing emerged to protect us. Okay, we have emotions like fear and anxiety, but it also evolved to allow us to bond with others and with family and to nurture our young, and this created a huge advantages evolutionarily, and this wound up being something that really worked in the model. So we have a highly developed emotional brain. And this is the, as my mentor Jerry used to say, this is the tail wagging part of the brain. When a golden retriever comes running into the room, wagging its tail and, you know, sticking its nose in your crotch and jumping up on you because it wants to play and be happy, that's the emotional brain. That's the mammalian brain. And then on top of that, as we grew into higher and more developed forms into primates and then into humans, we eventually developed this kind of dense bunch of neurons at the surface and kind of the front of our brains, the cortex and the frontal lobes. And this is where we process abstract ideas. And this is the rational or the mental or the logical part of the brain. And this is where we can make pictures of things. This is where we can understand symbols. This is where we can understand complex systems. This is where we can understand concepts. And we can take these ideas and we can juggle them around instead of having to do it out in the real world. Okay, so instead of trying something in the real world and seeing if it works, we can try it in our brain. Or we can watch someone else do it, and then we can go and do it. Very, very powerful part of the brain. Well, we have these three different brains. Okay, the physical reptilian brain, the emotional mammalian brain, and the logical or rational human cortex, but they don't really play very well together. In other words, when you have a physical drive, that often conflicts with your emotional conviction, and that often conflicts with what you know is right for you. Okay, so maybe you're getting a craving to go and eat some French fries, and emotionally you feel guilty about even feeling that drive, and mentally you know that it's bad for you to eat those French fries long term. So now you're being pulled in three different directions, and oftentimes conflict internally is because of a conflict in these three brains. But what's really interesting is that these three brains also represent the three realms that we live in: the physical realm, the emotional realm, and the logical or the mental realm. And my experience is that humans tend to be oriented toward one of these three realms. So we tend to either be a physical genius, an emotional genius, or a logical genius. So physical geniuses tend to be aware of the space and the objects, the movement, kind of their bodies, everything around them that's in the real world. They're comfortable doing things with their hands and, you know, doing things like climbing rocks and surfing and making things and constructing stuff. They often tend to be really good drivers. Oftentimes they'll, you know, be bodybuilders. They'll be in really good shape because they're in the physical brain more. They're more in tune. It's almost like that physical reptilian brain is more connected up to the perception of the world. An emotional genius tends to be more aware and tuned into emotions, their emotions and the emotions of others, and the flow of these emotions and how emotions trigger each other and how they're triggered by other things. And they tend to be most comfortable in the realm of emotions. So tuned into their emotions, tuned into the emotions of others, and tuned into the emotional tone in a situation. And you'll often find these people empathizing, trying to help others through their emotional problems, trying to make people feel better and make themselves feel better. Now, logical or mental geniuses tend to be more comfortable in the abstract or idea space. So they don't tend to be in their bodies or feeling their body or the physical world. They tend to be a little disorganized physically. They're not tuned into their emotions. They're dissociated from their emotions. And so sometimes they seem disconnected, okay, or up in their heads. But they're able to manipulate ideas with precision and skill and expertise. So they can have a big playpen of ideas in their mind, and they can be having these ideas interacting with each other in all different types of ways, and they can kind of consciously and intentionally manipulate them, try things out, build idea puzzles, solve things in idea space. Okay, so this is a logical genius, and you'll often find these people doing things like solving complex problems, working, designing software, being consultants to businesses, creating visions for the future that are very detailed, solving complex problems. Now, as I mentioned, each of us tends to be kind of rooted in one of these. Well, my experience is also that we tend to have a secondary function as well. Okay, so we have a primary function, a secondary function, and what we might call a shadow or our weakness, our Achilles heel. So, for example, someone might be primarily a physical genius, kind of in their body, in the physical world, tuned into what's happening in the tangible physical world around them, the objects around them, what's moving, what's not, how they're moving. And they might be secondarily an emotional genius. Okay, so they're primarily a physical, but they're secondarily an emotional. So they're physical, but they're also tuned in to emotional, and oftentimes the primary and secondary, they kind of interact. So someone who's a primary physical genius and secondarily an emotional genius would probably make an excellent doctor or some type of a healer, right? Using their interest in the physical world, their primary being tuned into the physical world and the mechanisms of cause and effect, and using this genius to support people in their well-being and their happiness. Okay, that would be a very typical role, I think, for someone who's primarily a physical, secondarily an emotional. And again, a doctor, and I said healer, you'd probably find these types more in the wellness industry or alternative health, because this is where you tend to find the more emotional version of a physical. You know, the traditional doctor with the bad bedside manner, that's probably someone who's a physical, who's secondarily a logical, and they're disconnected from emotions, or it might be the other way around, a logical physical. And that's why they don't have bedside manner, because they're not tuned into the emotional. It's in their shadow. What if we reverse these two things? Someone was primarily an emotional genius and secondarily a physical. Okay, so they're primarily living in emotion space, and then they're secondarily in the physical space. This kind of person, these folks tend to be artists and sometimes performers, because that's what art and performance is all about, is the emotion, expressing the emotion through a physical medium, like acting or dancing or creating a painting or creating music. Okay, so that would be a primarily emotional person and then secondarily physical. Someone like me, and I see myself as primarily a logical and then secondarily a physical, right? These types of folks, they like to architect information and create ideas that would work out in the physical world, in reality. Right? So they like to architect information almost as if they're building something physical in their minds with ideas. We like to invent in the thought space, but we also like to have it work in the physical world. Okay, so we're primarily logical, but we're also fascinated with the physical world. We want it to work in the physical world. Someone who's kind of the reverse of me, primarily a physical and secondarily a logical. Okay, this person might be a great athlete or a great explorer out in the world, as they're really embodied. They're in the physical world. They primarily are doing things physically, but they bring a logical, rational, kind of systematic focus and approach to their actions. Also, scientists would probably be in this realm here, primarily either logical and secondary physical, or physical and then secondarily logical, depending on what kind of scientist they are. But you notice how science is kind of disconnected from emotion and connection and concern with people? Well, that's because they usually live in one of these two realms. And I guess the final combination, someone who's primarily logical, but secondarily emotional. Okay, what kind of person would be primarily logical, but then secondarily emotional? Well, this is someone who might make a good philosopher or teacher, because primarily they're in idea space, but they're passionate about their ideas. And someone who's the reverse, okay, primarily an emotional, but maybe secondarily logical, they might make an excellent coach or a therapist, or maybe even a consultant, as they're naturally interested in the emotional health and growth and well-being of others, but they take a systematic and rational approach to it. Okay, so someone that's logical and then secondarily emotional, notice, or someone who's emotional and secondarily logical, their shadow is going to be the physical. So they're going to tend to probably be out of touch with their physical body, with health. They'll probably be pretty disorganized out in the natural world, kind of the real world, so to speak, because they're up in their head and they're in their emotions. They're abstracted from reality. So now that I've shared these three brains with you, which one do you think you are? Are you primarily having a physical experience, feeling embodied, always in the moment, looking around, seeing physical objects, noticing how cause-effect works and causing and affecting and doing things? Are you primarily an emotional genius where you're tuned into the emotional realm and you're comfortable in the emotional realm, always noticing how you feel, tuned into the emotions of others? Do you like helping others solve their emotional problems and feel better emotionally? Are you a logical? Are you an intellectual genius? Do you like to work in the abstract realm of ideas and thoughts? And are you relatively disconnected from your emotions and from your physical? And then which one do you think is your secondary? Which is your secondary? And which one seems to be the quote-unquote shadow, your Achilles heel, that place in your life where you just don't pay as much attention as you should? Next, what I'd like to do is dive into Carl Jung's thinking, interpreted through the Myers-Briggs personality type system. And what they've done is they've taken some of the distinctions that Carl Jung figured out. And I really don't know how he figured some of these out. They're so brilliant and insightful. But what we're going to do is we're going to talk about four pairs of functions or preferences. And we're going to learn about what they are and how they work. And what I'd like you to do is tune into them and see if you can notice yourself in them. Okay, we don't have time for a thorough treatment of this particular topic. If you're really interested in personality type, I recommend that you get my program Patterns of Personality that I did with Wyatt Woodsmall, who's one of the top personality geniuses in the world, and really learn about personality and yours and others and so forth. In this case, we're just going to listen and see if we can recognize our own type so that we can narrow in on what our gifts are. Okay, so the first pair of preferences in this system is extroversion and introversion. Okay, extroversion and introversion. And these are kind of common in everyday language now. The literal translation, by the way, of extroversion and introversion, the translation of extroversion is outward turning, and the translation of introversion is inward turning. So extroverts tend to turn outward, introverts tend to turn inward. Introverts tend to recharge their batteries by spending time alone. They tend to be introspective. They need to consider topics before speaking. And they tend to do well working alone. They do okay when they're kind of working alone in an environment or working on projects alone. In fact, they often prefer that. Whereas on the other hand, an extrovert tends to recharge themselves by being around other people. They tend to think out loud. Okay, they put their ideas out into the space to see what they think. They tend to be much more social, and they tend to work better when they're with others. And a question you might ask to figure out whether you're extroverted or introverted is, do you prefer, if you have some time off, let's say you had a weekend off, would you prefer to spend the time alone, or would you tend to prefer to spend the time with a group of people that you don't know? Hey, would you prefer to spend the time alone or with a group, a big group that you don't know? And introverted people would tend to rather spend the time alone reading, thinking, enjoying their peace and quiet, whereas extroverted people would tend to love the idea of a big group of people that they don't know to hang out with to recharge their batteries. The next pair of preferences in this system is the sensor and the intuitive. Okay, so we're going to introduce a couple of terms that you may not have heard before, and the way that I'm going to use these is not the way that you're probably familiar with, so pay close attention here. So it turns out that there are two different ways that we humans use to perceive the world, okay, to take in information about the world, our perceptual kind of system. Those that prefer sensation as their main perceptual system, they tend to be in touch with their five senses. Okay, so they perceive the world through sensation. They notice the details, how things look, how they smell. They want to touch them. They are focused on the right now and kind of literally what's going on. And they tend to take things that you say literally. They like concrete facts and specifics and data and proof. If you're looking at the forest and the trees, they like to go up to the tree and look at the tree and inspect it closely. On the other hand, those that prefer intuition as their preferred way of perceiving the world, it's not that they don't have the five senses, it's just that they're not as in touch with them. What they're always doing is trying to ask, what does it mean? Okay, so they look at the situation that the same details, the same group of trees that the sensor is looking at one of the trees, and they're saying, but what does it all mean? So the intuitive, when compared with the sensor who's focused in the now and the details, the intuitive tends to be focused on the future and on the meaning. They're much more interested in theories and the metaphorical view of how this group of ideas or this group of events connects up with others. And when you're talking about the forest and the trees, they like to zoom out and they like to look at the forest. Okay, so let's stop. Okay, we're about halfway through this system here. Already we can see how these preferences can cause lots of problems and lots of challenges in the world. So if you tend to be a highly introverted person, which I am, by the way, and you're with a group of extroverted people, which something like 75% of people tend to be more extroverted and 25% tend to be introverted, you're going to have your batteries run down, okay? Because those people are going to be interacting with you, and that's going to be a challenge that you're going to have to deal with. If you're an extroverted person and you're interacting with a group of introverted people, as you're processing and you're speaking out loud and you're trying to communicate so that you can understand what you think, and you're trying to get feedback from others and you're trying to play off the energy of the group, you're probably going to be very frustrated because that's not how introverted people work. Also, if you're an introverted person and you don't get time alone and you don't work in a situation where you can do work independently, you're not going to create the most value that you could. You're going to be running very inefficiently. And if you're an extroverted person and you don't get to interact with others in your work and you don't get to collaborate, and you don't get to express yourself and tune into the energy of the group, you're also going to be frustrated and you're not going to create as much value as you possibly could. Now, on the sensor intuitive side, okay, if you tend to be a sensor who likes the details, focused on the right now, takes things literally, wants to look at the tree, and you're hanging out with an intuitive who's always focused up in the world of meaning and the conceptual level, you're going to tend to be frustrated because, you know, you're going to say, okay, well, what do we do now? And they're going to say something very metaphorical like, well, I think what we should do is we should do what a flower does and unfold naturally, and that'll drive you nuts. And if you're an intuitive and you're hanging out with a bunch of sensors and you're saying, you know, can't you see the bigger picture and the future and the vision and the meaning of all this stuff? And they're saying, you know, yeah, but what should we do right now? You see how we can have some challenges here. And if you tend to prefer sensation as your way of dealing with the world, which, by the way, about 75% of the population does, you're going to want to be working with the details and with the concrete and with facts. And you're not going to be as concerned with this big squishy area called theory and meaning and metaphor and all these concepts. So you're going to need to be involved in work where you get to do concrete things, where you get to focus on the details, you get to take action in the present if you want to get your needs met and you want to create a lot of value. If you're an intuitive, right, where you're more focused on the meaning and the theory and the conceptual and the abstract and looking at things from the forest level, it's really important that what you're doing for work later in your life and as you develop is using that conceptual genius mind of yours to create meaning and to interact on a metaphorical level and to understand theories and to help create the future, because that's what you do well. Okay, the next two pairs. Each of us also judges the world. Okay, so we take in information and then we judge the world somehow. We have to make decisions. Well, some of us make decisions and judge the world based on how we feel emotionally, and some of us make decisions based on what we think rationally. So these are two ways of judging the world, and they're called thinking and feeling. Those that judge through feeling, or what we might call feelers, these people tend to be associated into their bodies. Okay, they're feeling their feelings in real time. And they're feeling them all the time, essentially. And they're usually deciding based on how their emotions inform them. Okay, so they're making the decision, good, bad, right, wrong, what to do, not do, based on how their emotions feel. And they trust their emotions. And what they say, well, my emotions are kind of the sum total of all my thoughts, all summed up in an emotion. So I can trust that. So that's how they make their judgments. Those that prefer thinking, on the other hand, they tend to be dissociated from their bodies and from their emotions, kind of noticing this as if watching from behind a window. And they decide, quote unquote, rationally, based on whether or not something adds up or is logical or it makes sense. And the thinker would say, well, my emotions don't really matter because those are irrational anyway. What matters is logic and doing the right thing, doing the logical thing that makes sense. So you might be able to see how these could run into some challenges, which we'll talk about in a little bit here. Then I've mentioned that, right, there are two ways of perceiving the world and two ways of judging the world. Well, just like there are two ways of judging and two ways of perceiving, we also have an interesting kind of a syntax or a way that we do this. Some people like to judge first and perceive second, and some people like to perceive first and judge second. Okay, so some people like to judge first, perceive second, make the decision, then kind of figure out what we're going to do. Some people like to perceive first and judge second. Well, let's figure out what we're going to do, and then maybe we'll make a decision if we have to way down the road. That's a little example. So the two ways of perceiving the world are through your senses or through your intuition, and the two ways of judging the world are through thinking and feeling. So you tend to be one of each of those. But then here's where it gets interesting. If you tend to judge the world first and then perceive second, this means that judgment is your preferred function of this pair. And judgers or what my good friend and mentor Wyatt Woods Small calls structurists, they like to judge. They like to decide. They like to bring closure to things. They like to organize, and they like to plan. In other words, they like to control things. Those that prefer perceiving as their lead function and then judge second, they are what my friend Wyatt Woods Small calls free spirits. Okay, these people tend to be spontaneous. They like to keep their options open. They like to delay decisions. And they're expert improvisers. They're great at making magic right now, real time, in the moment, out of whatever is going on. Okay, they don't need a plan. In fact, they don't want one. These folks, they like to control what's going on inside of themselves. So a great distinction that I got from Antonia and Cameron, who are some great teachers and friends, who you will probably be hearing from at some point in this program, they've kind of brought this idea that judgers, they like to control what's going on outside so they can be free on the inside mentally, whereas perceivers tend to like to control what's going on inside of them in their minds, so that they can be free outside to do whatever they want and be very flexible. Okay, so if you're a judger, you like to wake up, plan out your day, make a list, make decisions about what you're going to do, and bring things to closure, put structure in the world. If you're a perceiver, you like to wake up and say, what do I want to do today? And be spontaneous and improvise everything, delay decisions, and keep your options open. You want to stay free. Okay, now I'm stylizing these, of course, but they tend to come in these constellations, so hopefully you can recognize yourself in one of them. Now you can see some of the conflicts that can come up. Someone who's a thinker interacting with someone who's a feeler, right? They're saying, wow, you're doing all those irrational emotions again and making decisions based on completely irrational data, you know, which is how you feel. And the feeler is saying, you disconnected idiot. You're totally disconnected from your emotions. You're not in tune with any of the important things that are going on in life. And you don't realize that your emotions are making all the decisions anyway. And there's conflict. The judger and the perceiver. Okay, the judgers like to structure and control the world. So what they're always doing is trying to make the list of things we're going to do and make the plan and organize all the action steps. Whereas the perceiver is trying to keep options open, have more options, in fact, and delay making a decision because the situation might change and we may need to improvise. And hey, then we get to do the fun thing, right? Which is be spontaneous, stay free. They drive each other nuts. Perceivers are never on time. They're always late. Judgers are always early because they've been planning it and writing it down in their calendar. Judgers drive perceivers nuts because they're always trying to control them and say, when are you going to get it done? When's it going to be done? Give me an update on the plan. And perceivers drive judgers nuts because they're always changing the plan. They're always moving things around and they're showing up late. What you may have figured out at this point is that neither is right or wrong or good or bad. You may have missed that because we each tend to be associated, you know, more or less with one of each of the pairs. And so we say, oh yeah, that's the right way to do things, and we ignore the other. But what you may have realized is that they're neither right or wrong, and they're all needed, and they're all valuable. Each of them is a gift. Each of them is a very unique and special trait, a pattern. Something that we can use in our lives to help others, to help ourselves, to create value. Something that is, I guess, you know, almost a spiritual growth assignment is to go find your opposite, and instead of making them wrong, team up with them. Work together. Okay? An introvert and an extrovert can work very well together because the extrovert can bounce some of their ideas off the introvert. The introvert can think about them and use their kind of internal processing power and come back to the extrovert. A sensor and intuitive can work very, very well together. The intuitive can be thinking about the meaning and the big picture, and the sensor can be locking all the details in. A thinker and a feeler can be amazing together because the thinker can be looking at the rational or the logical side, whereas the feeler can be considering the people issues and the emotional issues. And judges and perceivers can work amazingly well together. In fact, I think that it's essentially, not optional that you find your opposite in the judger and perceiver world, because judgers are great at making plans, but perceivers are great at figuring out the thing that you're supposed to do in the first place, because they're great improvisers and they weave together lots of ideas into kind of the vision that can work really well in the future. And then the judger is good at structuring and organizing and keeping everyone on track. If you put a group of judgers in a room and you say, okay, go do this thing, they immediately start making lists of things to do. And typically, you don't have someone who's saying, well, wait a minute, are we even doing the right thing? You put a bunch of perceivers in a room together and you say, okay, go do this thing, or figure out how to do this. And you come back and they're playing video games and drinking beer, okay, because it's just not what they do. You put them together, one judger, one perceiver, or a team that has some judgers and perceivers together, and you get spontaneously, you get a mind that's bigger than everyone in the room and that gets a lot done. So team up with your opposite. Okay, so if you're an introvert, again, work independently or with a small group where you can reflect a lot and do a lot of work alone. If you're extroverted, try to work with other people and with a group so you can interact, you can tune into the energy of the room. Sensors, work with specifics and with details. Okay, do things step by step. Intuitives, work with ideas and concepts and theory and strategize about the future. Thinkers, work where you can analyze, criticize, solve complex problems rationally. Feelers, work where you can please others, where you can support them emotionally, where you can be appreciated. Judgers, plan and structure, set goals, help come to decisions, help bring things to closure and keep perceivers and projects on track. And perceivers, brainstorm, create, adapt, improvise in new changing situations, weave lots of ideas together, keep changing the plan a little bit, so that it keeps getting better and better. If you're a physical, find a role where you can use your physical genius to your advantage. Okay, like building things, performing, moving, using your body, building prototypes, building physical structures. And of course, use your secondary function as well. Emotionals, find a role where you can use your emotional genius to your advantage, like motivating people, or recruiting, or coaching, or selling. And of course, remember to use your secondary function. And then rationals or mentals or logicals. Find a role where you can use your logical genius to your advantage, like analysis or information architecture or computer software or system design. And again, remember to incorporate and use your secondary function as well, because it's a key piece of the picture. Okay, so now I'd like you to do an exercise. Physical, emotional, logical. Which one are you? Okay, physical, emotional, logical. Which one are you primarily, and which one are you secondarily? Okay, so which one are you primarily? Which one are you secondarily? And by the way, just note, which one is your shadow, the lowest one? Okay, the part that you can't see that probably trips you up in life. Next, make a list of the things that you think people like you are naturally talented at and where they find success in the world. Okay, so list the things that people of your type are naturally talented at, where they find success in the world. What do you think? Okay, this is an exercise. Okay, I'd like you to invest at least 10, 15, 20, 30 minutes in this, really using your mind to think about where do these types that are like you find success in the world. I already gave you several examples, but where do you see it yourself? We're using a different part of the brain. You're not just hearing what I think. You're now going and figuring it out yourself. You're asking and challenging yourself to come up with ideas. Next, do you find that you tend to identify more with introversion or extroversion? Do you turn inward or you turn outward? Do you find yourself more identified with sensation, with being in touch with the details and the real moment-to-moment experience, or more perceiving through intuition, okay, out of touch with the details, but more in kind of metaphor land and theory land and symbolic land, thinking about the future. Do you prefer thinking or feeling for judging things, for making decisions? Do you tend to be disconnected from your emotions and more in the abstract realm? Or do you tend to be in touch with your emotions and making decisions based on how you feel? And then finally, do you prefer to judge first or perceive first? Judgers, right? They like to make decisions, make plans, make the checklist, and keep everything on time, keep it under control. Perceivers like to keep their options open, go with the flow, be spontaneous, improvise, okay? Keep the freedom. Good. So once you've identified what you think are your preferences, I want you to ask the same question. And I want you to make a list of people who you think have succeeded in the world, and make a list of the roles, the jobs where you think that people like you succeed in the business world. Where do they find success in the world? Okay, I've given you examples. What do you think? And now I want to give you one of the real key insights that I've gotten in terms of creating success and turning talent into income. It comes from Peter Drucker. Okay, and I first learned this in The Effective Executive, one of his more famous books, which is a very important book. I highly recommend that you get Peter Drucker's book, The Effective Executive. It should be on your bookshelf. It's required reading. You should probably read it several times over the next year if you want to turn your talent into income. And what he says is that success in the business world comes from strengthening your strength, taking what you're strong at and making it stronger. It doesn't come from fixing your weaknesses. Success is from strength, and specifically strengthening your strength. Now you might say, well, what about my weaknesses? Okay. Now my insight has been that working on your weaknesses, that's how you experience success in the personal realm. Overcoming your shadow issues, looking at your dark side, looking at all of the things that make you uncomfortable, the things that you're bad at, the things where you're disorganized and screwed up and where you just feel like a mess. When you work on those, that's when you have more personal satisfaction, better relationships. You're able to develop yourself to a higher level of consciousness. But in this context, we're talking about turning talent into income, so we're going to stay focused on this path. Strengthen your strength. If you're an emotional genius, strengthen your emotional genius. Okay. If you're, if you're a judger and you tend to be use thinking, so you're a thinking judger, you're rational and you like to make plans and put structure together, strengthen that, learn that, study that, get to know other people who are rational judgers and learn how they created success. Okay. So strengthen your strength. And we need to look at our strengths, we need to look at our weaknesses, and we need to accept ourselves so that we can move on and we can get to strengthening our strengths. In the modern day, it's become embarrassing if you have any weakness at all. We feel like we have to be everything to everyone. And well, that's not how to create success. That's just how to be a good sheep and be frustrated and feel lots of anxiety and social phobias. Okay, so look at your strength, strengthen it to succeed in the business world. Go to work on your weaknesses, of course, too, but that's for a different project. It's for your personal life. And then finally, okay, what I'd like you to do is make a commitment to yourself to find the overlap between your natural talents and gifts and the in-demand opportunities in the business world so you can create massive value. I want you to make the commitment to yourself right now that you're going to find the overlap. Find where you can build a bridge between your talents, your gifts, and the in-demand opportunities in the business world so that you can create massive value. Okay, make that commitment to yourself, and I will talk to you in the next session of Turning Your Talent into Income.